This episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. I love cooking with Red Boat because it's made with only two ingredients, wild-caught anchovies and sea salt. This premium fish sauce is made in Phu Quoc, Vietnam and bottled right here in California. You can find Red Boat at select Asian supermarkets like 99 Ranch, H Mart, and Tong Phat.
My name is Lan Ho. I am the founder and CEO of Fat Milk Coffee based in Chicago, Illinois. We started as a CBG line, and now we just launched our first brick and mortar model, and we're kind of the first to do it out here in Chicago. So it's exciting times for us.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all over.
Congratulations, and thank you for coming on the podcast. I want to start off with a very simple question. I was in a restaurant the other week, and it was a friend of mine, a close friend of mine. He's a white guy, and you know, he has California cuisine, farm to table kind of deal. And on his menu, he has Vietnamese coffee. And so I asked his GM, I was like, so what do you mean by Vietnamese coffee? And he couldn't give me an answer that I was satisfied with. So I'm wondering if you have an answer to what makes Vietnamese coffee on a menu here in America.
Yeah, you know, I don't think it's a singular definition. I think Vietnamese coffee is actually a culture. Right? That's how I approach it. And, you know, you'll see evidence in that in the way that we brand and talk about Fat Milk. And even in our storefront, you'll see it in a multitude of different ways. And so when I approach it from a place of culture, I look at it from a place of intentionality, experience, how people present and enjoy the beverage itself. But it's so much more to that, right? It's the bean. It's where it's sourced, it's the origin, it's the people, it's the how it's brewed. And I think it's like a mix of, you know, how it's typically enjoyed in Vietnam, right? So it's so different than the way it is here in the US. And I think what you're seeing is kind of this merger of both approaches of like American sip culture and also Vietnamese coffee culture. And I think everyone approaches it a little bit differently, but all in all, I approach Vietnamese coffee as a culture where it's all of those things combined, and how you choose to present it, I think is, you know, telling a larger story there.
I'm not a militant sort of anti-appropriation kind of guy. That's not what I am. But I do have an issue then, because by your definition, which I love the definition, but by your definition, my friend's store is not doing it right, because I asked these questions and there's no answer to culture. There's no, they're not, I don't even think they're using Robusta beans. And it's just, I think the only thing that they're using is condensed milk. So it's like, you know, it made me think about that for many days before, you know, you and I were going to have this conversation. I was like, this is the top of the list for me, because you see it everywhere. You see it now in places all over, you know, the west side of LA, all these bougie spots, but they're like, they're putting Vietnamese coffee up, but it's like the management has no idea what that label means.
Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, it's a responsibility and an opportunity, right? For us to really be able to tell that story in the way that we want to tell it, right? And I think at the end of the day, you know, I think Vietnamese coffee is such an emerging category right now in the US, right? If you go anywhere else, you know, Asia or anything, like this is like a, just a non-conversation. It's something that is just so in tune with every single day practice that it's not a topic to be talked about, right? And so when I look at what's going on in the US right now, I don't necessarily approach it from a place of like, because I see those things too, right? Even right here in Chicago. And I actually like go and dig deep into like finding the transparency behind all of these things. But I always look at Fat Milk we're doing as a party and not a protest. And I really look at how we opportunity to go and tell a wider story where people are receptive to it. And I'm all being from a place where people can understand what Vietnamese coffee is, what Vietnamese coffee culture is, from a place of like really resonating with the brand, the energy, the vibe of what we're putting out there, and being able to be like, wow, I didn't know that. And then educating them from a place of like, now they're going to go and like, you know, maybe change something on their end. So that's all that we could really do from the perspective of these emerging brands that are, that, you know, we're seeing right now.
Hi, this is Kenneth Nguyen. A few years ago, before I launched the Vietnamese podcast, my father and all of his siblings passed away. Their passing marked the loss of their stories and the connection to my grandparents and great-grandparents. This is partly what inspired me to start the work of the podcast. Many of you still have the opportunity to record and preserve the legacies of your own families. I've just begun to sit with a few families now for interview sessions to record the rich histories of their parents and the lives of the generations that preceded them. Don't let your family's stories go untold. Take a moment to reach out to me, and together we will bring out your family's story on a recorded journey. I've included the link in the episode description. Visit VietnamStoryBank.com today for more information.
Yes, we will get into the emerging brands. I know there's Viet 5 out in Chicago. There's Coffee Supply in New York with Sara. Nam Coffee out here in LA, Orange County. Mm-hmm. And there's you. But before we get into all of that, and shout outs to everybody who's in the coffee game.
You
went to Harvard and got a master's in finance before you even got to pharmacy school, correct?
Yeah, no, I was in school for a very long time, 10 years of my life after high school, actually. Bachelor's, master's, doctorates. You name it. I think if there was a degree above a doctorate, I probably would have continued doing that as well. But I was definitely on a whole different path before I went and did my own thing.
Why did you not just keep in the business lane right after getting a finance degree?
You know, I think it's a multiple things. I think it comes from a place of like, when you don't have examples of that in your childhood and in your upbringing, you don't really know how to manifest anything. Yeah. You know, I don't think I really knew that that was a possibility for me. I didn't know how to argue and justify my decisions at that time. And when you're at such a young age, you're influenced by your environment and your upbringing, right? And when I could not articulate, you know, wanting to go the business route or what I wanted to do or even see that that was possible for me, I listened to my parents. You know, I listened to people around me in places of authority, you know, and you trust that that's the right move for you. And I think growing up, so much of, you know, I had a very, very traditional upbringing in the, you know, Southeast Asian culture where, you know, academic discipline and excellence was a non-negotiable. And so, you know, I will say that I'm blessed that that was something that I was good at. I was very academically disciplined and I got really great grades and I, you know, graduated with honors and all of that great things. And I think what it taught me is like, just because you're good at something, that doesn't mean that you're meant for that, you know? And I definitely took a lot of my experience being in school and being able to like put my head down, focus on something, achieve something into my business world. And I think it all pays so many dividends, even though I took a very untraditional route.
You could have gone into many different things in business. And I have a suspicion that coffee is not the first iteration of your business life. Were there other things before coffee?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I truly feel like I'm my daughter. I mean, I truly feel like I'm my father's daughter, right? Like, he's a true entrepreneur. He's dabbled in so many different things. And I did the same. You know, when I was in school, I launched a fashion company. I had a blog. I really enjoy creative writing. A lot of the creative copy that you see right now in Fat Mocha is me, you know, and telling that story. And that I love to narrate stories and I really invoke some kind of an emotional appeal to it. And that was something that I really, really enjoyed. But yeah, I would say Fat Milk is probably my third or fourth company that I really focused on that actually kind of took off. So, but you know, I think this one is really fun. So I'm excited that this is the one that took off.
And what led you to coffee?
I think, you know, being in school for so long, like 10 years, I mean, coffee was literally in my bloodstream, like constantly at that point. I mean, I lived off of coffee. And so I was first and foremost a consumer of coffee, you know, and I really enjoyed that lifestyle. I really was in awe of the, you know, experiences that I would get from going to all these different coffee shops. And kind of seeing how people would creatively approach coffee. And I think first and foremost, like I said, I was a consumer of it. But secondly, I always had this thought in the back of my mind. I was just like, I know that in the future, there will be a point in time where Vietnamese coffee is going to be so segmented outside of Vietnamese culinary culture, right? And I just knew that it was something that is so big in Vietnam and so big in Vietnamese culture in general, that it was going to be highlighted and optimized in some capacity. And I just knew that there was going to be space for that. So I think it was just like having those two perspectives kind of merge together for me to really, you know, go all in on fat milk.
When I think about the different Vietnamese coffee brands now in LA, or I'm sorry, in the US that are led by Vietnamese Americans, I don't really jump in and think about the distinctions of each brand that's bringing Vietnamese coffee to the mainstream. But I'm sure there's some sort of distinction between each of these brands. How much room for distinction is there in the CPG game for coffee, for Vietnamese coffee?
Yeah, I think it's just as equivalent to how much room and bandwidth and capacity there is in Arabica, right? Like when you look at some of the biggest coffee players out there, you know, some of the big, big names, they've been sourcing coffee from the same regions, you know, the same countries, coffee from Brazil and Colombia and Costa Rica and Ethiopia. And they've been able to really create, you know, empires out of these beans, right? Through their quality, through their roast profiles. I think just through their overall brand and customer experience. And I think the same capacity applies to Robusta as well. And I think if you look closely enough, the uphill battle that we're experiencing with Vietnamese coffee and a lot of the brands that are out there right now is that we have to go against this linear narrative about what Vietnamese coffee is, right? So not only do we have to educate consumers that there's, you know, a multidimensional approach to Vietnamese coffee, but then we're also doing it in our own way. And we're, you know, putting our own twist on all of these things, but we have to be able to dismantle that initial perspective or that initial perception on what Vietnamese coffee is for people to be able to see beyond that lens.
And how much time and how much effort and energy goes into dismantling that linear narrative?
Yeah, I think if that's your focus, then I think that it's going to take a lot of time and energy. But I've always approached it from a place of like, you know, like I said earlier, we're a party, not a protest. And that's not our strategy. We're not here to just really dismantle anything. We're here to produce a experience. When you come in, you're in awe. You want to learn more. You're intrigued, right? You love the brand. You vibe with it. You love what we're doing, what we're putting out there. Yes, we are a Vietnamese coffee company, but ultimately we're a brand that can stand, that is in our own lane, and that I truly feel like we're not really competing with anybody else that's out there, because that's not my focus. You know, my focus isn't to really dismantle all these things about what people think Vietnamese coffee is and how it's better or how it's worse, or, you know, like what it is and the definition of it. For me, it's like, come in here and you're learning a lot. You know, you're going to come into Fat Milk and you're going to be intrigued by what we're putting out there based on our vibes and our flavors and whatever the case is. And then you're going to just want to come in and learn more. And that's our approach to just teaching people about what Vietnamese coffee is. You know, even if you come in our storefront right now, we have a patent pending Fin Lab that's in the storefront, and people, we don't need to tell people anything about it. They come in, they ask questions about it. They're intrigued. It's like this theater aspect to our brand that we intentionally put out there for like an open kitchen concept for people to ask questions about it and want to learn more. We have to intrigue people's curiosity with the way that we approach something like this that is so new and novel to American subculture, and we have to do it creatively.
I love your approach. I love the answer. It's very refreshing because it's not doing things the same old way. Where did you learn how to do that? Where did you learn that thinking?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think I don't have an exact answer for that, but I think I've just always been a big observer of culture, of what's going on in the world. And I'm a big observer of consumer behavior. That has always been the intrigue with CBG and consumer products, is that I think consumer behavior is so powerful. And I've just always been in awe of certain brands who have been able to even influence the way I look at things and move me in ways that I wouldn't even have been moved or invested in what's going on in the world had it not been this collaboration between this brand and this brand, and how they merged all these really cool things. And I was just in awe of like how powerful, you know, that can be when done right. And I think, you know, I always look at the decisions that we make at Fat Milk as in like, if this is this going to invoke me? You know, I am my, when we think about the target audience of Fat Milk, it is literally me. So if I'm not intrigued or interested in what I'm putting out, then I'm not going to waste my time, my energy, or my, you know, resources in trying to push something that doesn't even make sense to me, right? And so that's the really exciting thing about Fat Milk, is that I am my consumer audience, I am my target audience, and I use that as, you know, a sounding board every single time. And the rest of my team too, we're a team of 10 women, and we're all minorities, and we're all around the same age. And I'm telling you, you put all 10 of us in a room, we make magic happen. It's a sight to see, you know, because we all resonate with what's going on in this company and how consumers are experiencing the brand and what's going on with the story and the Robusta game or the coffee industry or whatever. There's some significance there where people are just genuinely so invested in it. And, you know, it's so exciting to have this team ultimately be that sample population that we kind of test everything through. So we don't necessarily, you know, put forth any of that energy out there in what we do, unless everyone is like, all right, this is a vibe. We're doing this. Like, this is how we want to approach it.
So for all the audience who are listening right now, who are in traditional 9-to-5 jobs, who want to go out and do their own business, how much straddling, how much of that sort of that work balance between your hobby or your passion did you have to figure out as a pharmacist, as a working professional who invested so much time, money, and energy into your field of pharmacy? And then how did you transition over into building this coffee brand? And now you have 10 employees. That's a heavy lift.
Yeah. I mean, to answer your question, if you really have a vision in your heart to like go out there and do something, it's not ever going to go away. And that's something that I realized very, very early on. And so even when I was a pharmacist, I knew that this was not it. I remember my first day as a pharmacist, I literally, like an hour into it, I was like, yeah, this is not it. This is not it.
Really?
And you know, I tried to stay the course for sure because I was good at it. And you know, it definitely paid the bills, and I learned a lot during that experience. And I'm telling you, I can multitask a million gazillion things from my experience being a pharmacist, right? And I'm forever grateful for that. But be true to yourself. I know that sounds really corny, but like, you know that you have this dream, and I've had this dream to be an entrepreneur and to create for so long. And I just knew that it was going to happen one day sooner or later. And, you know, I think when the opportunity came, it was just a no-brainer for me to go all in on it. So I think it's just like never really giving up on that vision, that feeling that you have, that, you know, it's something that you really, really want to do, and you're going to do it one day. And if, you know, the opportunity strikes, take it. And that was something that happened to me.
So the tricky part of my podcast sometimes is all the research that I do about somebody like you, I know, but I have to ask the questions repetitively because I need the audience to be illuminated, to know. Yeah. You know, so questions like, you know, how did you come up with the name Fat Milk? And I'm sure that there was a lot of interference in the name. All of that I already know because I've already researched the hell out of your journey. But
Yeah.
Because of that, I do want to get down into the nitty gritty of the name Fat Milk. Why is there two eyes in the milk? What kind of difficulties did you have with the name Fat Milk? Because it's not really related to coffee. It is. So I'd love to hear your side. Obviously, I know, but I want to really talk about that for the audience.
Yeah, you know, I think because I enjoy creative writing so much, when I came up with the name, I really did a deep dive into Vietnamese coffee culture from a historical perspective, from a cultural perspective, and also from a consumer perspective, right? And I recognize that, you know, Vietnamese coffee is really approached from a place of fat milk, right? Like from a place of sweetened condensed milk. Like everyone just adds sweetened condensed to it and thinks that it's Vietnamese coffee. And even when we do pop-ups, it's like, oh, have you ever had Vietnamese coffee before? Do you want to sample this? Do you want to try that? Oh, it's too sweet for me. And I'm like, actually, we have it as a cold brew too. You know what I mean? So it's like this, like we talked a little bit about this earlier. It's like feeling like you need to dismantle a certain perception of Vietnamese coffee, but doing it in a very creative way. And for me, the sweet condensed milk, that's really what fat milk means. It means sweet condensed milk and a very literal term. But the way that I approached naming this company was picking a very prominent element to Vietnamese coffee culture that allowed us to expand the narrative, right? And so even you asking me, why did I name it Fat Milk? It allows me to tell you why. You know, it allows me to tell you, like, this is what a lot of people perceive Vietnamese coffee to be. And even though we're going to pay homage to that and let people know that, you know, sweet condensed milk and Vietnamese robusta beans really put Vietnamese coffee like on the map. It really is so much more like an extension to that, you know, and we were able to really represent the culture in a way that people are traditionally known or have experienced Vietnamese coffee, but it allows us to do it in such a different fit and flair and introduce so many different aspects to it. And so that's where the name came from. What it means to me and what it means to Vietnamese coffee culture is something that is so different to what it could mean to somebody else. But it is such, I recognize that that was such a prominent element and allowing us to extend the conversation even further. Yeah.
Why the two eyes?
The two eyes ultimately came down to wanting to represent the South Vietnam flag. Right. So I think both my parents are from South Vietnam. You know, it's the coat of armor. Right. And so we wanted to have some kind of element there that showed, if you look at the double eye with the line from the L of the milk, you'll see that there's three lines there to represent South Vietnam. And it just kind of caught on. It was just one of those things where now we put double eyes in all of our brand assets. And every single time we talk about it, like even, you know, Vietnamese coffee or like drip coffee or whatever the case is, we put a double eye where a double eye makes sense. And it just kind of became this like brand identifier in everything that we do, right? And we trademarked all of that. So that's kind of a long story short to answer your question. It became a design element to telling the overall brand identity of Fat Milk, but it's ultimately to represent the South Vietnam flag.
All right. I'm going to get into something a little bit.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
More touchy with the representation of the three stripes. So with the three stripes, this is clearly a Vietnamese American brand then, right? Because that's sort of like what it, but do you source from Vietnam by any chance?
I do. I source from small batch farmers myself. Yeah.
Very cool. And so do you ever feel like as Vietnamese Americans, because this is something that I talk about all the time, as Vietnamese Americans doing business in America, and we represent ourselves with the flag of our parents, of our sort of our lineage, is there sort of this separation that you feel when you go to Vietnam or when you work with people in Vietnam?
No, I don't feel any kind of separation there. I actually think when I look at the history of it, and even it's so much in our brand deck too, and how we approach the decisions that we make, I celebrate our history. You know, I look back at that and I pay respect to how we got to where we are today, you know, and I look back on that and I love and appreciate and respect, and I'm so moved by the stories that I hear from, you know, my parents' generation and my grandparents' generation and all that. And I don't sit here and approach it from a place of wanting to fight that or do, rightfully trying to rewrite that or anything like that. For me, it's like I can, just like any history, and even in American history, you know, there's always places where we can look back on that, understand what happened. We don't necessarily have to agree with any of that stuff, right? But we can understand and pay respects to the past and being able to do something differently in our decisions moving forward. So I have a great relationship with the farmers that I work with in Vietnam. I have a great relationship with my broker team in Vietnam as well. And we have a very synergistic relationship and wanting to push this culture forward, no matter if it's there or here.
That's great to hear. I love hearing that, especially with second generation Vietnamese Americans in the diaspora. It's so important that we honor the previous 100%. Generation in the history. But at the same time, it's important to expand who we are as working professionals, you know, in a space where we need to be in contact with the motherland and not cut off and have these specific distinctions that, you know, and so I love that. I love the growth mindset. And want to ask you, you know, when you go to Vietnam, what are some of the things that you really enjoy about Vietnam today?
So I will say I am actually going there again at the end of the year. But last time I was there was 4 years ago. And, you know, the things that I really love when I'm there is so much of being able to understand where I came from so much more. When I went there last time, you know, we visited my parents' side, my mom's side, my dad's side from all over, you know, Vietnam. And I think what I really, really love about it is the untold stories of so much of what you're seeing in Vietnam and the expansiveness that we get to be able to tell more of that through the decisions that we make here, you know, especially speaking from a business owner's perspective, right? It's so much culture. I mean, my eyes were like so big. My ears were so open when I was there. I was like kind of looking like a deer in headlights in a good way, where I just wanted to take it all in and I wanted to understand it more. And I just, you know, I think there's so much to learn and so much to still discover about Vietnam and the people there. And, you know, I pretty much created a whole entire company dedicating, you know, that curiosity and that respect to wanting, you know, that be such a big part of my life.
Yeah, that's a great answer. How did you end up on Gordon Ramsay's Food Stars?
So Gordon Ramsay's team reached out to me on Instagram. So that's how I ended up on the show.
It's that simple?
Yeah. They essentially slid into my DMs, you know, and said, hey, we think you would be a really good fit for this new Gordon Ramsay show. Like, let me know if you're interested. And I believe I was the last contestant to be recruited on the show. And I had 1 month to decide if I wanted to do it, submit everything that they asked for. And, you know, they were very, you know, TV time. They're quick. They're just, you're on their time and they're on schedule. And it's just like, we're really loving you. We're really loving what you're doing. And we would love to have you on the show. And I had to go through a lot of these formalities, right? Submit a bunch of stuff, whatever. And it ended up being like, you know, a few weeks later, they're flying me out to LA and I'm filming for the show. So that's how quickly this all happened.
Holy cow. And what's the experience on the show like for you?
It was different. You know, it's definitely different. I've never done anything like that before, but it was a no-brainer for me, you know, and even especially if you're here, like really trying to make something of yourself, trying to really make something of your company. I think it's a no-brainer for entrepreneurs to take these opportunities. You don't know how, it's scary, right? Because you don't know how production is going to make you look, how editing is going to make you look. Yeah. And, you know, not only are you representing, you know, your brand on this brand new business show that Gordon Ramsay is producing, but it's also like you're representing the future of your company and representing yourself and yourself as a leader. And so it was very high anxiety the entire time on the show. And I think we all felt that way, you know, like if it's not a reality show where it's just about you, I mean, you're really putting yourself out there as the founder, CEO, whatever of your company. And like, however this is portrayed, are people going to want to like support you or work with you and, you know, work for you or whatever moving forward. So it was a totally different experience. It was probably one of the more challenging experiences that I've had during this journey, but I feel so incredibly blessed to have had that opportunity 2 years into building Fatmall.
Yeah.
So,
and, you know, the crazy thing is it was the first season, right? Of Food Stars. Yeah. So, you know, I've had many chefs on the show, on the podcast to talk about their experience, like at Chopped or Iron Chef. And you could review multiple seasons to see what other chefs have done and you can strategize. Right. So when I thought about you, I was like, wait a minute, this is like a brand new show. She cannot strategize to figure out how to win. Did you think about that? Like, how would you approach
100%. I was like, but I did tell myself, here's the deal. If I'm going to be on the show, I'm going to be on season one. And I, you know, season one, I wanted to be an OG contestant. And that was something that if I was ever going to do it, I was going to make sure that, you know, that was going to be the season that I participated in. And so that came with its pros and cons, you know? And I think for me, I was so confident in my business abilities and my business acumen that one thing that I will say, I was like, look, I know Gordon Ramsay is a TV personality and I wasn't scared of him. I was inspired by him, you know? And if I had the opportunity to learn from him and like even argue with him, I was all game. And so my approach to preparing for the show was I just watched a ton of Shark Tank and I watched, I binge watched The Apprentice because I knew it was going to be some form of The Apprentice, right? And it was really hard for me to find seasons of The Apprentice. I mean, you would find certain things on YouTube, but that was all I had going into it. It was like literally belief in myself, faith that I could fight my way out of anything or, you know, negotiate any kind of conversation. And I that's really what season one contestants had to go in there with in order to be successful. There was really no, like you said, no preparation leading up to that with prior seasons.
And how has it changed your life and how has it changed the company?
Yeah, you know, I think it's one of those things where when you have an opportunity like this, it changes your perspective more than anything, right? And that's the biggest thing that I took away from that experience is that I left the show thinking so big. I left the show playing so big, you know, and I realized that the exposure that I had and just even being in that environment, right? Even before the show even launched or, was on TV or people even knowing that I was on the show, I was just like a part of this huge production, like 200, 300 person production team, Gordon Ramsay's team, and like all these contestants. And we traveled all throughout the season. We're in Vegas and Napa Valley and Seattle and all these things. And I was just like, wow, there's this whole other world out there. There's so many other opportunities, you know? And so I came back from that completely changing my perspective and thinking like, wow, I need to get this brand to a place where we can scale logistically, where we can be, you know, we can communicate who we are and who we're not in every single part of the US and eventually part of the world, you know? And it just made me think big, play big. And that was, I would say, the biggest difference with being on the show, like before and after.
You know, there's so many different things that you could pivot and get into with this brand. And I can imagine developing different products and CPGs and SKUs. How do you stay focused on a singular sort of path to grow the company when there's so much opportunity for an entrepreneur like you?
Yeah, I think as an entrepreneur, we're all faced with making those decisions. Yeah. Like, what's the best next move, you know? And I think one thing that I will say, you know, we're about to be four. Fat Milk is going to be four in September, which is wild to me that I've been going at this for 4 years. But one thing that is that, you know, these last 4 years have taught me is what our strengths are, you know, and what in recognizing that, that's what you double down on. And I feel like the decisions that we've made and staying of being very strategic and intentional with our SKUs and our experiences is really based on brand, right? And building something with longevity. And one thing that I try to avoid doing at all time is to chase the shiny things. You know, and I see it all the time with my founder friends or even in the category and other CBG categories. It's like, you know, there is a blueprint that exists for CBG out there. And that's how we started, right? Now we're a hospitality company as well. We have a storefront and we're expanding that. And there's so many other things I'm already thinking, you know, 3-4 years down the line. But one thing is that, like, there is if you're part of this industry, there is a blueprint on how to do things, right? How to get on shelves, how to raise money, how to do this, and how to scale your business and distribution and whatever. And I've just been such a big observer of seeing some of our other competitors doing it, either Vietnamese coffee or not Vietnamese coffee, just coffee category in general. And I always ask myself, does that even make sense for us? You know what I mean? Like, is it even the right time for something like that? And I've just been very, very inquisitive about being intentional with our growth and not doing it because that is what the category traditionally has seen CBG to do. I've never followed that path, and I think it served me well.
You know, you talk about this blueprint that I was going to ask you, is there a blueprint out there? You said there's a blueprint, but beyond just having a blueprint, is there another outside of the CPG or outside of the coffee industry? Is there other companies that you sort of look at and are inspired by? You know, for me, I listen to the Acquired podcast. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it's like two guys who break down companies, like big companies like Nvidia, Hermes, Louis. And I think about how they strategize, and I even think about how they do their podcast. And I'm such a big fan. Is there a company out there that you sort of go, wow, I would love to kind of grow my trajectory like them?
Yeah, I think I take inspiration from so many different companies, you know, and more than anything, I take inspiration from different categories. And I think that's where our secret sauce is, to be honest, is that I'm not really looking at the coffee category and how other companies are doing it right now and how other companies have done it. We're looking at different, you know, categories in music and fashion and, you know, entertainment and how all of these other categories have been able to attract consumer appeal. And we're taking all of that inspiration and merging it into a food and beverage company, right? And that's what's making it fun for me. And I think that's what makes Fat Milk stand out, is that we don't really, you know, we see the blueprint out there, right? And we definitely see examples of how people have followed that blueprint. But I don't think that works for me. And that doesn't inspire me. And You know, I think it's like taking right now, we're really, really moved with what's going on in the fashion category right now. And just the ebbs and flow of it and the creativity and just kind of like the collaborations and the partnerships that we're seeing, like that is a big influential category that we're really pulling from to move in the next couple of years.
Yeah. You sound like everything is based on lifestyle rather than CPG, mm-hmm. rather than packaging. It sounds mm-hmm. like you're moving gradually or you're already there and focusing more on lifestyle than the actual brand, its coffee brand itself.
Yeah, you know, I look at food and beverage and I think, you know, at the end of the day, to actually make it move and create real value for people, at the end of the day, it's a non-negotiable that you have to have a great product. That is like, you shouldn't even be in business if you don't have a great product, right? So once you like check that box and know that we have a great product, you know, I stand by our roast profiles, I stand by our quality. It's like, what is going to actually have people coming back to stand by what you're doing and be loyal to what you're building, right? And building that consumer trust and that just brand equity in general. And you have to integrate yourself in people's lifestyle. That's my approach to it. And that's how I'm swayed as a consumer, right? At the end of the day, you know, people focus a lot on product and don't, like I said, do not get me wrong. That is a priority. But once you pass that product part of it, what else are you selling as a brand? Are you selling entertainment? Are you selling inspiration? Are you selling like a lifestyle, like so many other things where people can really attach themselves to that and continue to come back for more and more and more, right? And be inspired by what you're building. And that has always been my approach because I don't want people to just enjoy the enjoy the coffee and then be done with it. I want us to be memorable. I want people to be like, oh crap, like Fat Mocha is about to launch this. Like, I got to be there, you know, like Fat Mocha is about to drop this or Fat Mocha is about to open up here. Like, I got to be there. I got to like carve out time to like make sure I'm first in line or I get that drop. And I think ultimately, if you can build that kind of culture and that kind of excitement around your brand, you got gold, you know, and that was something that was always something that I focused on in the decisions that we made.
So the decision to do the retail store, did that come from day one? Like you had that in mind or did that sort of come gradually?
I think it kind of came gradually. I speak about us launching, you know, I incorporated the business in 2019 and then we launched in 2020 during the pandemic when brick and mortars and storefronts were scary times, right? Like everything was shutting its doors, in-person kind of experiences were, you know, dangerous. And there was just like, it just wasn't top of mind, right? But as we continue to build this brand, like I said, I'm a huge observer of what's going on in the industry and how people experience this category. And I recognize that coffee is actually an in-person experience, right? Very rarely do you go online to experience a coffee company, you know? And it's not to say that, you know, brands can't be successful purely as an e-commerce brand, but I'm saying in order to really build that brand equity, if you're able to like have that in-person trust with them, your e-commerce sales, your online sales are going to come gradually. It's going to come with its own territory, right? And I recognize throughout the first couple of years of Fat Milk that we're privileged enough to be in a category where an in-person experience can't exist, right? And you can't say that about all CPG companies. Like you can't necessarily say that about, you know, a granola company or a cereal brand or whatever, but we're coffee and we have the opportunity to expand, you know, our strategy and actually having an in-person experience that mimics our digital presence, right? So when you come into the storefront, you're seeing a mirror image of what you see online, like that energy and that vibe in person. And it's 670 square feet. So I thought about it from a very economical perspective. We're not adopting, you know, that Starbucks model where we're, you know, a third home and it's 5,000 square feet and whatever. We are efficient. We are high quality. We are about convenience. And you come in and you get to learn. You get to see what's going on. We brew the coffee right in front of you. You get your coffee and you get out, you know, or you can sit around. We have 8 stools, you know, that are all looking out. Outside, but that is the model. And I think that's what we really wanted to double down on.
I'm going to end on this question. being an entrepreneur has a lot of ups and downs. And I think that during the dark moments, it's what we tell ourselves that really matters and counts. Do you have those dark moments? Have you had them in the last 4 years? And how have you gotten out of it?
Oh my goodness, Kenneth. You have no idea. And I recognize people tell me all the time, especially my team, it's like, Lan, you have one of the best poker faces I've ever seen. I think it's, you know, I have really learned to stay calm during the storm, you know, and I'm a spiritual woman. I'm a woman of faith, and I have a lot of trust and belief that this vision that, you know, was placed in my heart was there for a reason. And there's been so many moments that I've evolved throughout this entire journey, you know, where I think now just going on 4 years, I've actually taken a moment to like reinvest in myself, right? So like, it's always been a hustle. It's always been a grind. And we have zero investors. A lot of people have no idea that that's the case. I own 100% of Fatmoak. I have bootstrapped this entire company. And so it has been nothing but challenges and moments of growth and lessons learned. And I've stayed the course, you know, and it's a really, really exciting time now because we're starting to have some really exciting conversations, you know, with people who are going to take us to the next level. But I built this company being very culturally conscious. And that was really important for me to do that. And I have a clear vision now. I have people that I, you know, want to show up for and do right by. And that's how I wanted to build it before I ever invited outside voices or outside, you know, capital into what we're building. And to answer your question, nonstop. It's nonstop. It could happen. Yeah.
That's very inspiring. But did you ever have any temptations to go back to a pharmacy?
Never.
Never.
Wow. Never. Yeah, I think there's been moments where, you know, I daydream about the perks of having a corporate job. I'm like, wow, that was really nice to have a salary and benefits and, you know, like being able to just clock out and disconnect from whatever. Like, of course, I'm going to look back at that and be like, those were the perks. But never since, like, not a moment in my day did I ever think that that lifestyle was for me. And I, you know, I think for me, it was just like, I love what I'm doing. I love that I get to do this. I feel so blessed that this is my life. Of course, there are moments where I'm just like, this is the hardest freaking thing I've ever done. And, you know, dark seasons for sure. But I never had a doubt in my mind that this is exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Len, thank you so much for opening up and sharing your journey with me today.
Thank you so much for having me on your podcast and, you know, allowing me to share everything that I've been, you know, my life and Fatmoak and all of that. I'm excited to see this come out.
Thank you, Len.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.